connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
Move the fuck over, pal world.
Yep. We can't even do an intro yet. We have to talk about Chimera Land.
Yes, okay. So, this is sort of Trailer Blazes, but also I have played this game because it was too tempting, too alluring, and it's free.
My god.
So I was like, I can't stop. I have to try this. I have to see it for myself.
You took part of the CBT initiative?
No, it's the OBT.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Which is tea, of course, brewed by a guy named Obadiah. So, sorry, that was a really dumb joke. I apologize for that. I have other things to apologize for, but we'll get to those later. We have to talk about Chimera Land.
Yeah. Okay, Chimera Land. As the person who hasn't explained it, or who has not played it, let me explain the trailer really quickly. Much like Pal World, it looks like it's a, like, kitchen sink Unity game, where it's, like, it's this weird mishmash of, like, Korean MMO and, like, it looks like Monster Hunter, sort of. It has a million different races you can be. You hunt really big creatures, but also there's, you know, like, base building and stuff, like every game needs to have nowadays, thanks to Minecraft. And it looks insane. The first trailer alone is so good because it's literally like a comedy bit where it's like this, you know, mystical dragon thing like comes down and, like, you know, chomps on a lion or something and then, like, transforms into a lion head, and then, like, two of those fly off and a whale eats them both.
Yeah.
If you have not seen this trailer, please pull over to the side of the road now, or pull over to the side of your room now and watch it. You need to. It's so good.
Yeah, so Chimera Land, as somebody who's actually played it, it is a game that is not afraid to look like a janky piece of shit. It leans hard into the Monster Factory type character creation. So, here's the thing. There's like 20 to 30 playable, like, races of character, most of which are furry. And you can bet they play up the sex appeal of the furry.
Hell yeah.
There's things like jellyfish furry, dragon furry. You can have, like, a cuttlefish dude.
Oh my god.
It's kind of wild, the sheer diversity. But also, it's impossible to actually make the character look hot. Because the sliders will just fuck it up immensely. Like, you could try. Have fun with that.
Yeah.
It's probably gonna look bad, and they clearly do not care that the equipment you have will clip into your model. That's your own fault. That's not their fault.
We gave you the default model.
Yeah. I don't even know if the default model would fit all the equipment they give you. So there's base building, and base building has a lot of different systems involved. I actually kind of enjoy the way the base building works in the game. It's kind of pleasing. It's not hard to use, which is really important for base building.
Yeah.
It's not hard to make things exact either. It's grid-based, so, you know, that's good. The thing, though, so it has, like, this monster-catching aspect where when you weaken a monster, you can either kill it so you can get experience and scavenge its body for supplies, or you can use a capture crossbow that will, kind of like Pokemon, there's a chance it doesn't work, but if you're a high enough level and it's at a low enough health and you have enough ammo, you can keep trying until you catch the monster and tame it. Also, you have to hatch monster eggs if you want a permanent monster. That means you actually sit on the egg to nurture it until it hatches.
That's really fucking funny.
Yeah. When you have a monster, when you have more than one monsters, you can make your active monster eat another of your monsters. And when it eats, it levels up. It has a chance of gaining the skills of the monster it ate and the physical features to some degree of the monster you ate. And once it has changed physical features, that now becomes a toggle you can use forever as long as you have that same monster. So you can have it eat, like, one of everything, and eventually you're going to end up with a completely mix-and-match monster. So not only is the character creation made to make a fucking weirdo, but also is the monster taming. See, I've seen games that try to be like, oh, it's Pokemon, but you can fuse your Pokemon. But, like, I mean, sometimes it works. Like, Monster Rancher has that, and it's essentially just the color palette of Monster A gets added to the physical characteristics of Monster B. But it's never as in-depth as, like, including major physical characteristics. Like, you're not going to see a Blastoise fuse with a Magmortar and get a cannon on its hand.
So, I want to say two things. First of all, a Buddhist monk plays Chimera Land and says, I'm going to make myself one with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, so this game is every genre. This is, like, Impossible Creatures, Pokemon, Monster Rancher.
Is actually one of the best comparisons you could make.
Yeah.
Also, I forgot to mention, so you, once you make your character, through playing the game, you can get, like, rebirth tokens that let you rebirth into specific races. And much like the monsters, once you have played a race, you have access to their unique features.
Oh my god!
For future character creation. And you have a thing you get really early in your base that you can use to customize your look for, like, sliders and stuff like that, and colors. And eventually you can switch out your, like, race-specific parts. Like, I'm playing a bee character, a bug person, and so I have the big bug thorax with a stinger. But, like, if I get, like, the dragon coin, I can make a dragon that then has a bug thorax.
So it's not even a case of, like, this character creator is jank. They know
yes.
what they are trying to make, and what they are trying to make is the ability for you to be a giant jellyfish man with a bug thorax
yeah.
and a human face.
Yeah, it's
you can called, make Face Cat and Hand Dog.
It's called Chimera Land.
It's oh my god.
I learned about this game because I saw Vinny Vinesauce play it, and he made this like fucked up like Link. Kind of like a mix between Toon Link and like Skyward Sword Link or Breath of the Wild Link. And it was really funny. And now I realize, like, at first I was like, do the devs really want this type of guy to play the game? And then I was like, oh, of course they do. This yeah. is what they want. They want you to make a weird little guy.
This actually might be the Monster Factory video game.
I know. I really hope they come out of retirement from Monster Factory to make it.
Please.
Please.
Please. I know that they've...
From one podcaster to another.
Yeah. Please. Yeah. They like switched it over to their main channel, which, you know, good move probably, but like, please, please come back. Please do just one more series.
Please.
Because this is like the ultimate fucking, I need to play this game.
Yeah. It also has things like, weapons with like weapon combos and character action animation cancel stuff. And there's a bunch of different classes and types of weapons. It has, like, a skill tree system with constellations, where you fill in constellations and then you get large perks.
Oh, okay, Path of Exile. Let's just, again, throw everything on here.
Yeah, You can hire NPCs as companions. Most NPCs, like, every NPC I've run into has had a, like, mini quest where if you give them a bunch of a specific item or resource, you can have them follow you around and fight with you. It's everything.
This is... Okay. I have to give really, like, huge props here. Because, like, obviously I'm getting this secondhand, and I am not the devs. I do not know their internal monologue. With games like Pal World, or, like, the other one that we looked at, it feels like the devs don't realize what kind of weird monster they're creating. Like, Pal World seems a little more into it, but, like, the idea of holding a fluffy sheep while you gun down people with an M16 is, like, that looks like the kind of thing that you go, I don't think the devs realize how bad these clash. This seems like a case where they realized at the outset that none of this was going to, like, you know, like, blend together with good animations and stuff, and so they just leaned really hard into the jank angle and went, if people like jank, we'll give them jank and then build a bunch of mechanics on top of it.
It's a real, like, Kusoge
MMO. Oh my god. I want to play this with a fervor that I cannot describe.
Yeah, join me.
Yeah.
We'll have to team up and put our bases next to each other.
What if I put my Chimera Land base next to yours?
It's just the two houses from Over the Garden Wall that got so big they combined into one house. I think about that episode a lot.
Oh my god. So, this is Talk Surfer for Show. This is Talk Surfer Show, a whirlwind ride through whatever we want. I'm your host this week, Galen.
And I'm your co-host slash apologist, Matthew, because I made an error in our previous episode. Was it
Yes, it was a previous episode.
So, it has been made known to me that there is no character named Finger in Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. It's a character named Mike, which I had heard the name Mike Ehrmantraut before, because there is a CBB character that was a parody of it, but I didn't realize that was who the image was. Apparently, so the Finger part of Kid Named Finger has no relation to Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, the greater B universe. the Saul Badverse.
The
Heisenverse.
Heisenverse, I kind of like
the Heisenverse. Instead, the meme got really popular in the Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul like meme community, and it went out from there. It was a case of a meme community making a meme, you know, or turning a meme into something of theirs using these like faces, these reaction faces, and then other people finding those faces funny. And then it's spiraling out from there. So it got to the point where I was propagandized. I was fed false information.
Can I make my own YouTube apology, but to you specifically?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of knew that his name was Mike, and I didn't correct you the entire time.
Oh, that's so funny.
To be fair, I have not seen anything from the Heisenverse either. And so when you said his name was Finger, I sat there going, isn't his name Mike? And then I went, I don't know, probably, maybe it is actually Finger. And I just, like, this missed something.
This is like some Nathan Fielder bullshit. I'm like, you're setting me up for an awkward situation later.
Except I didn't even set it up. I just didn't correct you because I was unsure of myself.
Yeah.
You think that I'm the Nathan Fielder, but I would posit here that the Nathan Fielder is you for making a mistake that I could not, that I felt awkward to correct.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
The rehearsal is incredible. I'm not fully caught up, by the way. I'm on like episode 5, but holy shit, that show. Not going to talk about it right now.
Yeah.
Instead, we have a lot of other topics to talk about. A lot of news since our last Talk Surfer show.
Yes.
I want to go off with something that was, like, I think it came out, like, shortly before a previous episode or shortly after our last Talk Surfer, which is some news about Bayonetta 3.
Yes.
That I think is really funny in a lot of ways. So, Bayonetta 3, you know Bayonetta. We don't have to explain it further. But it has a mode in the new upcoming Bayonetta. It has an option called Naive Angel Mode. And on Twitter, the official Bayonetta Twitter announced this by saying you can play the game when other people are in your living room now. It's hilarious that they are including that. It's hilarious that that's what they called it. Makes me think of the Smash trailer for Bayonetta. You know.
I think I do.
Pit is the naive angel. It's also hilarious that capital G gamers went, oh, this is censorship. Oh, the Japanese devs catering to the West. When it's like, it's an option you have to tick. It's put in, like...
It's... Okay.
Okay.
Okay. For a bit of context, I feel like this was, as far as capital G gamers would see it, a response to one guy, because there was sort of one, like, small main character of gamer Twitter who basically said, like, I wish I could play Bayonetta with my parents in the room. And that started discourse that I'm not going to get into. Don't give a shit. But I think that that's, like, this is essentially a Tracer butt situation where it seemed like to gamers, like, one person complained about it and then the devs went, okay. And, like, I just, I don't see, why can you get mad at that? Like,
options are good.
Yeah, having more options are good. It does, like, I mean, I've seen the trailers, like, it doesn't, it's doesn't change too terribly much. It just puts a little more, it's literally like they put in like the Smash model for her, you know, where like she still loses some clothes, but like she is essentially wearing like a leotard more or less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's more options are good. Letting more people play the game is good. I think it is kind of funny. Like, I do think it is funny that they named it Naive Angel Mode and that, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it is, I think that they are having a bit of fun with, like, you want a censorship option, we'll give you one, but we're gonna, you know, be a little cheeky about it. But, like, it's, you know, video games have a long history of this. Video games have a long history of, like, the easy mode being, being, you know, like, baby mode or whatever. And, like, that has its own discourse, but I support Bayonetta 3 100%. Yeah. I personally will probably not be playing it with Naive Angel mode, but I'm glad that the people who need it have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great. Shouts out to Rhythm Heaven Fever's Bossa Nova minigame and playing that in the living room. This actually brings me to a point of news that I didn't put on the list of our topics on our phone, but I want to talk about it because I just remembered it. Hideki Naganuma and Kotaro Uchikoshi fighting over trans Twitter. So Hideki Naganuma is the composer for games such as Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future, Sonic Rush. He has done guest work on Lethal League Blaze and soon to be Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. And Kotaro Uchikoshi is the writer and director of the games like the Zero Escape Trilogy, I, the Somnium Files, and some other games I don't remember off the top of my head. But so Hideki Naganuma has somehow acquired a very like trans heavy fan base. And he leans into that a lot.
Positively.
Positively. A lot of it is just him, like, kind of just affirming trans women. They'll be like, you know, what do you think of this girl? And they'll post a picture of themselves, and he'll be like, you know, he'll say something nice or whatever. He definitely doesn't try to be creepy.
Yeah.
And I think he tries to be not creepy. But, you know, he'll just be like, you know, I support my trans fans and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. It is the kind of fan interaction where it is funny and it is cool that he is based as hell, as they would say, as the kids say these days. But enter, it is, yeah.
Enter the ring, Kotaro Uchikoshi, who a fan was basically like, not, okay, it was a capital G gamer again, who was a transphobe, being like, actually, non-binary people are a made-up term for the bourgeoisie to be oppressed. And Kotaro Uchikoshi was like, where did you find the definition for that?
Oh, right!
please donate that dictionary to me so I can put it in the something museum. And he was like, non-binary people exist in Japan, dude.
Yeah.
Like, and then the funniest thing about both of these is the alt-right shithead gamers are starting to say, like, they're bots, or they've been, they have people from the West writing tweets for them. It's like, they use English, that means they're actually Western writers who are writing these things. And it's so wild to me, it has shown me, like, I see time and time again this, like, very racist interpretation of Japanese culture. This happens a lot with weebs, where they will see any change in a, like, progressive direction only as, like, a reaction to the West and not a, you know, inherent or personal statement by the artists.
Yeah.
You know, they don't see Uchikoshi saying non-binary people are valid. which is obviously based as hell.
Yeah.
They don't see that as being a real statement made by the creator. They see that as him buckling to Western pressure or being a psyop or something.
Yeah.
Because to them, Japan is shitty, but they love it. It's like they have invented this haven where their shitty opinions are, like, normalized. And when confronted with the reality that it's not that simple, they deny it and say that it's a psyop.
It's Spartification. It's this, like...
That's a good term.
Yeah. When, you know, a different sect of alt-right shitheads, have, you know, Spartan stickers and, like, idolize the big, strong Spartan West, they don't actually care about actual Spartan culture, which was both shitty and very gay. Those two are not mutually exclusive. Like, it was very gay, and also there were a lot of bad things in Sparta. I don't think that's bad to say.
Yeah. I mean, all of Greece was pretty gay.
Yeah. And all of Greece had problems.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it's this idealized prelapsarian sort of, like, you know, this view of, like, yeah, I've heard that Japan is, like, really conservative, essentially, and so either everybody in Japan is correct in my mind, and if, you know, like, actual Japanese people come out and say, like, hey, that's not true, then they're clearly buckling to external pressure, they're a psyop, they're, you know, they don't represent the true Japan that's in my head. It's this, you know, I love this sect of, like, shitty alt-right idiot too, because it's like, it's Bidoof's Law as well.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, ugh, I miss the real Japan. And then I miss the real Japanese people who were super conservative and cool and stuff. And then, like, you go to their Twitter and it's just, like, retweets from a bunch of hentai artists. And it's like, liking porn isn't bad. But if your whole deal here is, like, I miss when these were good people, I miss when these were, like, the cool times, then you're a stupid shithead and you deserve nothing good.
Yeah. Watch Utena again.
Yes.
I also think, so you see this a lot when it comes to translation.
Yes.
So, there's two parts to this. One of them is Yamato from One Piece, from the current arc. Yamato is great. He uses masculine pronouns, calls himself a man, and went to the men's, like, bath. Like, you know, the bathing area,
you know,
the open bath for the men instead of the woman's bath. And when asked, like, hey, do you want to join us, by one of the women, he says, no, I'm a man. So, should be pretty clear, right?
Yeah.
Now, a lot of, like, alt-right One Piece fans are like, that was put in by the translators. That there's no way Yamato would be a man in Japan, right? But I'm like, okay, do you read Japanese? Do you speak Japanese? Because the translators are paid to officially translate something. You would think that there would be a certain amount of, like, accuracy they have to, like, you know, strive to.
Yeah.
And this is most present or prevalent currently with Bridget.
Yes.
We support trans Bridget.
Yes.
Bridget is a character from Guilty Gear who was just added to Guilty Gear Strive, like, right after Evo happened, because Evo happened, by the way.
Long-standing character for some background clarity.
Yes, she was not in the previous game, Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator. She was in Guilty Gear Accent Core, and is really fun and weird in that game. But she was confirmed to be a trans woman in the most recent game, in the story mode, in a few cutscenes that are kind of incredible, given the other character is, like, the Colonel Sanders Area 51 FBI guy.
So, yeah, side note, I love Japanese writings of, like, the President of the United States.
Yeah.
Because they're always so good.
Yeah, Gold Lewis is incredible. So Bridget is confirmed a trans woman. And again, alt-right gamers, I don't want to spend the whole episode talking about alt-right gamers do shitty things, because that's a given.
Yeah.
But, like, to them, they're like, oh, this was added in by the translators. She's not really a woman or whatever. And that's stupid for a lot of reasons. And I think one of the biggest things, for one thing, is that Daisuke Ishiwatani, I think, the creator of Guilty Gear, the director, game designer, composer, you know, the guy who's really behind the whole thing, you know, he speaks English. He sings in English in a lot of songs. So he would know if the translators did something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, he would be able to tell. He is not an idiot. But also, here's what really grinds my gears. The defense that they always give is that Japanese doesn't have gendered pronouns. Ask those same people what the difference between ore and watashi are. That's to say they don't have gendered second person pronouns like him or her, but they do have gendered first person pronouns.
It
boggles my brain how, and the thing is, the thing about that is that you hear that all the time in anime. You can't even excuse it as people who only watch anime being unaware of this type of thing because it's not prevalent. Like anime, you know, it fantasizes a lot of stuff in culture, you know. Not every anime school, or not every Japanese school is going to be exactly like an anime school.
Wait, you mean Howl's Moving Castle isn't real?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say.
I thought that was based off a true story.
It's based off a, you know, it is a story that exists.
I guess all things are based off stories that exist.
Nothing is original. Thanks, Joseph Campbell. But like, you hear the usage of these types of things all the time, and they always come with the translator's note that's like, ore is used for men, in watashi or atashi are used for women. And boku is used by boys.
It's this weird game that I've seen a lot of times, not just with Brisket, who we love.
Brisket,
we stan a queen.
Yeah.
Brisket is a very good other, like, tertiary meme to this.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I remember seeing somebody, like, actually about, like, Vivian in Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, which rather famously heavily implies, I do not know Japanese, so I will not specifically say that she is trans, but in the original translation, there is a lot of, like, it would not take even a molecule of, like, speculation to say, oh, Bridget is trans because, like, her sisters are really shitty to her and, like, call her a man. Vivian, yeah.
Yeah.
Did I say Vivian?
You said Bridget.
Fuck. Oh my god, Bridget is in my favorite game of all time. Vivian. Vivian's sisters are really shitty to her and misgender her, and at the very end, Goombella is like, I love you, Vivian, you're great, you're my favorite girl, or whatever, and it's like, you know, gender affirmation. This is cool. This has been, like, one of the longest running, like, fun facts, essentially. And some dipshit, like, a year ago when I saw this, was like, actually, in the original translation, it could mean that they're simply calling her ugly because of how Japanese people use these specific pronouns. And it's like, shut the fuck up.
Maybe we shouldn't use gendered pronouns to criticize people's appearance, because doing that is shitty for both reasons.
Yeah.
It ties gendered pronouns to a form of, like, beauty or appearance, and also, it's shitty because you shouldn't be judging other people's appearance like that.
Yeah, and it's...
And even if it's a villain, it's like, that's not... No.
It's this game of, like, in my pure Japanese world, they wouldn't do something like this because I don't like it. Therefore, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to Google, like, the first thing I see when I type in gender Japanese language translation, and then be like, actually, in the original Japanese version, they probably didn't mean it like this. Like, shut the fuck up. We have the translations.
Yeah.
Like, it does matter in, like, how things are in the original versus how things are in the translation. That's something that translators, like, constantly deal with, is like, how do I transfer this idea into this language when there isn't a specific word for it? But, like, get with the times, Grandpa. Trans people exist. They're not that complicated.
in sort of a side note, a lot of people hate Neo Tweewee for some reason. One of those some reasons being just that the translators did some localization where, like, they added in some, or they changed some jokes around to make more sense in English. Like, they added the like, mocking, like, alternating uppercase, lowercase to a line a character says. And some people hate that. I don't know why. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It's like the purity test that they present cannot actually be completed by any translator.
Yeah.
To them, the original is the only sacred text, but they haven't put in enough work to actually understand the language involved, so they just piss and complain. It's their shield.
Yeah. It's
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
That is sort of a topic I wanted to touch on, though, that's been bothering me a lot recently, is the sort of Orientalism inherent to a lot of weebs.
I
want to talk about it because I think it is a behavior that I want to criticize and bring up so that others may recognize when it happens and not get brought along by it in a sort of propaganda style.
Yeah. And I like talking about this just because it lets me reaffirm that we are 100% supportive of the trans community, of the gay community, of any progressive community, ostensibly. If you are trans, that's really poggers.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's the final message for that chapter. Do you have any news to talk about?
Do we want to do a small segment just since we're kind of in the like slightly angry zone? Do we want to do another segment of Galen doesn't like Fortnite?
Sure.
Galen doesn't like Fortnite. Dragon Ball is now in Fortnite.
I don't think that's something negative. If anything, I think it's a net positive.
It realistically, it is. They've added the Kamehameha, which is kind of hilarious. Because you literally jump up and do a fucking Kamehameha. It's awesome. Yeah,
and you can do that with any character model. So I saw, like, Rick Sanchez doing a Kamehameha.
I don't think I'm going to resolve this. I think what I'm going to do right now is set up my dilemma.
Okay. The Galeners dilemma.
The Galeners dilemma. The Galen Knight dilemma. I hate Fortnite. I hate that Rick Sanchez is in it, and the alien is in it, and that Goku is now in it, and Naruto is in it. I hate that Fortnite is literally the version of, like, that plastic toy that has Thanos and Naruto, but they're mislabeled as, like,
it's the
Fist Man.
It's the Obama Harry Potter backpack.
Basically, yes. I hate that. I love multiverses for roughly the same thing, and I do not know how to coincide those two ideas. I don't know if this is just going to be a case of, yeah, I'm a massive hypocrite, or if I can, like, somehow weasel my way into going, no, it's legitimate when the thing I like does
it. Yeah. I can kind of see it. It feels a lot like Fortnite is the product of, like, brand deals and marketing because of how big it is.
Yeah.
It is easy to be cynical about any inclusion as just a way to make more money. Whereas, like...
My gut reaction is I'd hate this, I don't... like, Dragon Ball right now is not trying to sell anything, I don't think.
I mean, it's Dragon Ball. It's a franchise.
It is a franchise, and, like, it's probably going to...
They're always trying to make Dragon Ball because people will buy Dragon Ball.
Yeah, but like, when I look at Dragon Ball's inclusion versus like Darth Vader being the last unlockable in the battle pass, true story, currently this might date the episode because battle pass might be gone, but
like any of the news we talked about wouldn't date the episode.
That's true. No news is forever. Tomorrow we're going to wake up and look on Twitter and be like, did you know Bridget is trans?
She gave me a yo-yo. I guess while we're talking about games we're playing, I really need to bring up Sandcastle Builder.
Yes.
So Sandcastle Builder is a XKCD fan game incremental game based off Time, which is the XKCD comic that was one panel that updated every so often and change to something else. It's an incremental game where you click on a thing to get resource, you spend resource to get other resource, and then you can make things that make resource over time. And then it's like Cookie Clicker, where really the point of it is to just keep going up, making bigger numbers and unlocking more stuff. It has the XKCD flair of like a lot of obscure mathematical and scientific references in, like, computer science. This isn't really an obscure reference, but instead of doing like million, billion, trillion as the suffixes, they use mega, giga, what's next? Like yada, exa, zeta.
Mega, giga, tera.
Tera, yeah. Mega, giga, tera, zeta, exa, yada. Stuff like that. The computer, like scientific like suffix or prefix system. You make sand in castles, but then eventually you get the ability to make glass in glass blocks, and you can use glass blocks to make a ceiling, a glass ceiling. There are, I believe, 12 glass ceilings, and they give you humongous multipliers to your things you make. Also, by the way, everything is like exponential or some degree. Everything's very mathematical in that way. Like prices increase by 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, so on. But so like the glass ceilings to make them, not only do you need all those resources I said, but it has this like built-in Tower of Hanoi puzzle where like you can only lock certain glass ceilings, as in remove them from your inventory, if you have other ones locked. And you can only buy the next level glass ceiling if you only have the glass ceiling right before it. So to buy five, you have to have only four unlocked currently. Then buy five, then rebuy zero through three. And then to get six, you have to do that same process and leave yourself with just glass ceiling five.
Huh.
I have this huge paste bin up on the other screen that shows the instructions in the form of how many glass ceilings you should have at a time. Because it is just, like, repeating different iterations of this process. It is so much. And I didn't even mention the logic puzzles. There are these things called redundakitties, which will appear randomly. And if you click on them, you get a bonus. And that bonus sometimes is really good. And also, the more you click, the more multipliers you get for other stuff. So that's good. And over time, clicking them gives you more things you can do. Like, they can produce sand, castles. They can produce glass blocks, and eventually they give you access to logic puzzles, which are like the SAT style, like question A is true or false. Question B is true or false. Question C is then like A is true and B is false. And then you have to work from there.
Yeah.
So every time you click on one and it gives you a logic puzzle, also you have to solve these correctly or else you won't get all the multipliers and goodies and stuff. So like I'm over here like trying to play, you know, like MapleStory or something, and then I see I have a kitten, and so I click on the redundakitty, and then it puts me into like high school again. I'm like, oh my god, I gotta solve this. And then I'm like, okay, do I have enough glass blocks to destroy all of my ceilings except for my biggest ceiling and then make a new big ceiling? And it is way more than I expected. I never got this far. Every time I would try to play it, I would get bored because I never really took the time to play it. But now that I am, I don't know where it stops. I just got a dragon egg.
Okay. Let me tell you why I like this explanation. Part of the fun of Cookie Clicker and part of the point of Cookie Clicker is that a lot of the fun bits you can unlock, by the time you really unlock them, you can't actually play with them. Like, by the time I unlocked the dragon in Cookie Clicker, I was already making enough that, like, leveling up the dragon to its full capacity was completely trivial. And so this sounds like it is constantly iterating.
Yeah, there's a lot of systems you have to keep track of. The best, like, tool for you to buy varies depending on what boosts you have and what systems are currently active. Like, once you get the Swedish Chef, trebuchets become really good. But before that, rivers are the best option.
Yeah.
So you buy rivers until you get the Swedish Chef, and then you get trebuchets, and then that unlocks the ability to get bag puns, and so you start building more bags, and then you get phone saw.
Is it ready?
Yeah.
Good.
It's ready for me. Yeah, it's a lot, and I kind of love it. See, one of my favorite subgenres of video games is ones that make no sense if you explain it to somebody else. That's why I like Kingdom of Loathing so much. I'm like, all right, you don't understand. I had to equip my Unspeakachu so I could copy the buff from Ishkabibble so that I could then finish my Snowman Assassins.
Oh, yeah. Nah, the Snowman Assassins. They really get you.
They do. Oh, you don't understand. Jesus. I had a 3-turn Fuckle one time. I'll never relive those days. That was my peak.
Can I move on to a topic that I can speak about?
Yes.
Cool.
You can speak your part.
Switching gears real quick.
Sorry, that was my car. Switching gears.
Hey, I like analog horror.
I know.
I've talked about it multiple times on this show.
And we'll be talking about it more in the future.
Indeed, I will.
Almost certainly.
Alex Kister's, the volume 333 of the Mandela catalog is fucking awesome, actually.
I still need to watch it.
It's kind of great.
I still need to swatch it.
The Mandela catalog is, like, genuinely great because Alex Kister himself kind of got tired of analog horror, essentially. Like, so... Well, the reason I'm bringing it up is because we saw the renaissance, we saw the, like, explosion of analog horror, and now we're, you know, getting the, like, entropic end where everybody's kind of sick of it. I have watched, by which I mean I've watched a lot of people talk about, so many goddamn series. And, you know, I can't say... Okay, listen... I cannot say that, like, a genre being overflowing with examples is necessarily a bad thing, but a lot of examples kind of suck. I assume that this is going to be cut out, but there was a long pause there.
Now, I'll keep it roughly, I'll keep it as long as it is funny.
Good. Yeah, so... now, the good news of this is that we have a new frontier, which is digital horror, which I fucking love.
And I'm sorry, that's really funny. What's next? HD horror?
I know.
Blu-ray horror?
I know. Streaming, like, horror? Holographic horror? That's so 2485. Now we're on to fucking four-dimensional horror.
See, this is the glass ceiling puzzle. Every time we reach the current form of horror, we reset back to analog,
yeah.
And then it takes a while to build it all the way back up.
The reason that here's the thing. I like digital horror. The Flipnote series, the something archives, the June archives. Horror. Yeah, it's Flipnote horror.
That's cool.
It's really cool because it uses a lot of old classic Flipnotes, and it's literally, like, the themes are about, like, memory and forgetting things and, like, the terrible shape of which nostalgia can, like, eventually end up. Here's my biggest problem with a lot of analog horror or just kind of, like, this internet horror web series style is that a lot of times I find myself asking, okay, so what? I'm going to bring up one specific example, the Tri-Red Archives. The Tri-Red Archives, and if you are the creator of the Tri-Red Archives, or if you like the Tri-Red Archives, no cap. Go ahead. You should be expressing yourself. I am glad that you enjoy this work. I am going to speak ill of it, but I do not mean any ill will towards the creator while I speak ill of it. Okay. I don't like the Tri-Red Archives. I can explain the three episodes that I saw really quickly. Episode 1, kids are going missing in the park of this small town county. It ends with step 5, just prepare for the news that your child will never come back. And it's like, horror. Episode 2 is like this really... I don't even remember what happens in it, but I remember the stinger at the end is, like, it shows missing people, and it's not just children, it's, like, teenagers, and then, like, this mask comes down, and it's like, ooh, spooky. And then episode 3 is like this, the main character of this series, I assume, is like becoming a cop to try and solve the missing people, which apparently like 1,000 people per day have gone missing, or like 100 people per day. That's not a small town event. That is a national tragedy. Anyway, and then like it like ends with like his friend dying or something. I don't give a crap about dead kids.
That's a dead kid.
That's a dead kid. Dead kids are in every single web series, and like I don't care. Like okay.
I was gonna say, I think Care, and then who is the girl from Monument Mythos?
Oh yeah, Virginia.
Those two. What's so good about them is they're characters.
Yes,
they're not just props.
Yes,
they're not just like tick marks. You know, they're characters that you get to know. And so you get attached to them as you do with characters.
Yes, exactly. The Monument Mythos is my favorite is my favorite analog horror series, and Petscop is my favorite web series. And like, that's exactly it. Is like, if you're going to kill a bunch of kids, make them people.
Yeah.
Like, give them some personality, and then make me care about them, and then break my heart. Like, you know, like FNAF VHS and like, you know, like FNAF itself and stuff like that. Like, the dead kids are just props of like, oh, isn't it horrible? Isn't it horrible how Purple Guy can't stop killing kids?
It's power level.
It literally kind of is.
Vegeta, he's killed 1,000 kids. No, Nappa, he's killed more than 1,000. He's so evil, he's killed 9,006 kids.
Like, I think Harmony and Horror does it pretty well in that, like, it does characterize sort of more or less everybody who is killed, and if it doesn't specifically characterize them, it characterizes them post-death. Like, that is a good, like, good horror series things to do. But for, like, the Tri-Red Archives, it's, like, it's literally comical. 100 people a day are going missing.
Yeah.
Why have you not called the National Guard? Like, why isn't this place on martial law lockdown? And, like, it's just, goodness.
Yeah, I don't know. That's another rant corner for us.
Yeah.
I want to do, I think, one or two more bits. I really don't want to do a rant, though. I want to do something very not ranty. I feel like there's been a lot of negative energy coming out of this whole...
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm a big manga reader. I'm a bit of a manga aficionado, if you will. I read a lot of manga. I read everything that's printed by Shonen Jump, which is because they have a official website where you can read official translations for free, which is really cool. It, like manga has the same problem, or I guess comics in general kind of have the same problem that music has, in that people are so used to getting it for free that they don't want to pay money for it anymore.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, the way that Shueisha, the publisher behind Shonen Jump, is combating Shonen Jump piracy and fan scans are to just do it themselves.
Yeah.
And, like, I like that is a thing. It still has the same thing where, like, if you want to support the author, you can still buy the official releases of, like, the manga, you know, similarly to how you can buy the official vinyl or CDs of an album. But so, because it's available, I pretty much read everything in Jump. The only series I'm not caught up with right now is Blue Box, because it's sort of a rom-com, or not even a rom-com, just like a romance. And I'm not super interested in that. But I recently caught up with one called Undead Unluck. And this series it hits a lot of checkmark boxes for me. I was doing a thing with my hands there, but I'm on microphone, not camera, so you can't see it.
You have good hands for radio.
Thanks. I have radio hands, they say. Radio Hands is my new album. Undead Unluck is a lot like JoJo's, and hear me out.
Okay. You've already got me. I'm a fan of JoJo's. Thank you very much.
So it is a action series So it is an action series with weird power sets. They're themed power sets. JoJo's isn't always themed power sets, but it is weird power sets.
Yeah.
And I'm specifically talking like everything after, everything part four and after of JoJo's.
Yeah.
Where the fights are not necessarily about like beating up each other, but they are about how the powers interact. Oftentimes there is a, there, both characters have certain kill moves, and it's a, not just about who can land them first, but how can they strategically maneuver themselves through the fight. Another series it's kind of like is like Petals of Reincarnation, which I may have talked about on a previous episode. That one, it's themed around historical figures. Undead Unluck, the power sets are themed around Un. It's words with Un before them. So Undead is a zombie. Unluck is a girl who, like, whenever she touches somebody, horrible misfortune will befall them after she stops touching them. And and from there it goes out, like, there is Untouchable, who has like a force field around her. She can expand and contract. There's like Unrepair, where whenever he breaks something, it can't be fixed, including if he like pierces somebody's skin or breaks their body, that can't be fixed.
Ooh.
There is Unbelievable, who is as good as he believes himself to be. Which, that's the second character in a Shonen Jump manga to have that power, and I fucking love it. It's so clever. You know, there's Unbreakable, who can make material that cannot break ever. There's Unstoppable, who runs really fast and runs through things. There's Unmovable, which is the opposite, where things he looks at are frozen. It's very cool. Every character, their unability led to somebody close to them's death. They all have a tragic backstory worked into their backstories.
Nice.
And it's just like a common thing. It's like, oh, how did your power set lead to somebody you care about dying? Oftentimes in ways you would not expect.
Yes, the trauma dump shonen.
Yeah. But in some degrees, it's really wholesome in the ways they overcome their unabilities, turn them from curses into like strengths. But also, like, the fights are really interesting. Like I said, they're all about maneuvering themselves strategically through a battle. I'm a big fan of the fight against Unending, who can infinitely recreate ammo that he spends. So he just has, like, a chain gun with, like, one bullet in it. And he has, like, a strap of grenades that don't end.
Holy shit, that's awesome.
I'm also a big fan of what is it? There's they fight a bunch of like demons. Also, that's part of the lore that's really cool. This thing has really cool lore. Is there's like a book that is made by God to add rules to the world, the universe, unless the characters are able to stop a quest. And these rules sometimes manifest as demons that can be defeated to remove the rule. So, like, they have to defeat all four demons of the seasons. So, like, they fight like August and summer, and then they're like, "Why is it snowing everywhere? It's snowing in Egypt." And it's like, "Because you left winter alive, you dumbass." They also reveal that things like aging, shadows, death, like biological sex, language, race, those are all rules added by this book because they failed to complete quests. One of my favorite bits is they kill the language demon, meaning that language has returned to a universal language, and then one character tests it by speaking to another character in a different language. Oh, also the Un people, the Un powers, aren't affected by the rules updates, whereas everyone else in the universe are.
Good.
So, like, one character, and this is how they find a new person with an Un power, is he's trying to speak Japanese to his classmates, and they're all speaking English. Because in this Japanese manga, English is the base language, I guess, which is kind of gross to think about, but it's a Japanese manga.
Yeah.
Anyways, no, it's fantastic, but it got me thinking about the structure of fights in shonen series, shonen battle series specifically. And I think, so most shonen series are very JRPG. I think this really started with Dragon Ball, Because before that, it was like about one main character who largely went through things by themselves, maybe with a few companions, but they weren't really fighting companions. That's because they were based off like 80s action heroes, like Kenshiro from Fist of the North Star or Ryo from City Hunter. Those are characters based off 80s Hollywood blockbuster hits, things like Die Hard or Rambo or, you know, stuff like that. Now, Akira Toriyama did the art for Dragon Ball. He's the creator of Dragon Ball. He also did the art for Dragon Quest and, you know, Chrono Trigger and stuff like that. He brought this very JRPG mindset of characters form parties of friends who are all of relatively similar strength and status and also get, you know, pretty equal screen time, except maybe the main character's a little above. But, you know, in Dragon Ball Z, like Piccolo, Vegeta, Krillin, they all get in fights almost as often as Goku does. They all get chances to show off. However, oh, and then this advances further. Naruto brings in sort of the, like, class ensemble, where instead of just a group of, like, four main characters, it's a group of, like, 20 main characters that are all given screen time and development and made interesting. But so the other JRPG thing is in the way fights work. And I don't want to bring this up as just a manga creation or a JRPG creation, because like there's a lot of action movies where two people get in a fight and they hit each other a lot and they get up and they hit each other some more. But I think it is to an even greater degree in a lot of manga where like a lot of fights are characters exchanging blows directly. And then, like, it's a battle to see who gets up more often. I saw this, I've been rereading Bleach as well, and there's a lot of fights where Ichigo will pass out, and then he'll be like, no, I gotta get up, and then he gets up, and he fights again, and he wins. And it's like, it feels like two characters in an RPG attacking each other's health bars.
Yeah.
Where there is a point where they will pass out, they hit each other a bunch, one of them has a higher health bar or a higher DPS. Now, I think stuff like some of Part 3 and Part 4 onwards, JoJo's or Undead Unluck, they're not as JRPG because oftentimes the characters have very tangible threats to them. They don't get like, they don't start bleeding all over their chest and then get up and are like at peak condition. You know, it's, the only character who does that is the zombie, should say. When a character gets, like, severely wounded in a fight, they react to it. And if they're, like, bleeding a lot, then they're probably going to pass out. If they don't pass out, it's only for, like, a few moments, and then adrenaline wears off.
Yeah.
It feels a lot more like power sets are not just what kind of weapon you have, and it's more so, like, how do you apply this? Like, in One Piece, people with kind of really different power sets will fight each other, and it'll just be whoever knocks the other one out first. Sometimes it's different, but like Luffy versus Katakuri is a great example of, they have pretty different power sets. They are kind of meant to be mirror matches, but like ultimately the thing that makes Luffy win the fight, spoilers, is that he just lasts longer. He doesn't give up and he keeps pushing.
To add a couple of cents to this, because yeah, while I've not...
For Galen to break up my spiel.
For JoJo specifically, I feel like the crux of the power set fights that turn into, like, tool set fights is essentially that, like, there are certain upper limits. So, like, for Part 3, and kind of, like, roughly any part Jotaro's in, the reason that you have like tool set fights is because if it were just a straight fight, usually there's kind of one clear winner.
Jotaro.
Yeah, Jotaro. This is why a lot of the fights that like are tool set fights more or less end with Jotaro. Like it's a getting Jotaro to the ability to go ora 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 and then beat the guy up. Now this is not like, again, this is not every fight. Certainly there's a lot of tool set fights, especially, like you said, Part 4, Part 5 especially. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen Part 6, comment.
Even some elements of Part 3, kind of like anytime Dio shows up, it often ends up being just a exchanging blows fight.
Yeah. Yeah. DOV Jotaro is kind of the biggest example where it's like, it is a big exchanging blows fight. And it is a, like, example of kind of, like, health bar running out and then Jotaro going, but I can't give up on my friends, and getting his second health bar. But even within that, the tool set that is used, like, the tool set that is used to resolve them does play around with those ideas, but in the end it does kind of end up with, you know, the rota roller da,
yeah,
that ends with Jotaro going ah and punching Dio, and he's dead forever this time. Yeah, definitely.
It's different than like the fight against the guy who makes you a baby.
Yes, there's the fight, there's the guy who makes you a baby, there's like the fight that Jotaro can't punch the guy because it will beat up Joseph. There's, you know, there's all kinds of fun fights, especially honestly, like most Polnareff fights, play around, yeah, with the like tool set style where like, definitely these are people who can punch each other, but the fight is more about finding that precision strike, finding, yeah, that one moment. But yeah, part four gets way closer into it where you have, you know, entire ass, like not even really fight scenes. One of the scenes is just like, haha, you're trapped on this electrical tower now, and I can leave. And it's just trying to prevent the guy from leaving so that actually Jotaro can be the one who leaves. Or, you know, things such as that nature. And part five just goes, like, a whole hog into that, because that's where the series was developing. And it's very, very fun.
I think a lot of these successful shonen series do a pretty solid mix of those. They save the exchanging blows, can't have to get up sort of deal for like very climactic moments, but they almost always start on the strategic end and then they go to the stamina end and then it's kind of back to the strategy. Hero Academia does this, for example, a lot, really. They put a big focus on the like team compositions,
yeah,
of their characters, because Hero Academia is based a lot off Naruto, and Naruto did that. There's a lot of like strategy fights in Naruto where they'll be like, I had to do this so I could distract them so I could do this, or I need you to take out this enemy. But then also when it comes to it, it switches gears and says, I will keep getting up because of my friends.
It's like, so this certainly doesn't describe every fight, but to me, it kind of feels like footsies almost.
Sort
where
of.
Where it's like, you have the strategy that lets you get in. I think this is more for like the part three style than the part four or five, which are much more heavily toolkit. But like the part three style is very much footsies, where it's like, you have, you know, one character gets one good punch in because they do something clever. But now the question is, okay, but how can you, like, get yourself into a similar situation again now that your opponent knows that?
Yeah, there's the mental aspect, the mind games aspect. It's hard to really think of, like, a good way to categorize the two. I guess the way I would put it is one of them is a puzzle game or an adventure game where you need to find the solution to a threat.
Yeah.
It is Guybrush Threepwood getting stabbed by, like, a pirate, and you have to realize you have to, like, grab a banana and attach it to a string or something. Whereas the other one is an RPG where you have a battle that could use strategy to make you win better, but it ultimately comes down to numbers butting against each other. I think, like I said, a lot of successful series do a mix of this, but sometimes you see series go all the way to one end of the axis, and that usually doesn't pan out for either side. They usually end up in cult hit territory. But I really love the mind game aspect of stuff like Undead Unluck. And like I said, the like really surreal world building.
Yeah.
It's very fresh in a lot of ways. I don't want to spoil too much about the current like arc of what's going on, but I picked the best and worst time to catch up because it's like an interesting twist was just made.
Ooh.
So I'm like, I wish I could read further, but also now I can keep up with it weekly and get excited. But also like nobody I know reads this. So
yeah.
I have to get excited in my own house and just kind of sit there.
There's a lot of jokes I could make around that, but we're not going to.
Yeah, my my unpower is what would be the verb for this? It's
hit me with what the power is, and then
it's I don't produce insulin.
Unpancreas? No. Sure.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, in some ways it feels sort of like an allegory for disability, but also I hate the tragic disability trope.
So
treating it with that lens would imply that that trope is present, and it's not. Like, I don't think that's the explicit, like, message the author is going for. It could just be that I'm what's the word? Like, I can see myself in the characters to some degree. I am not able to think of words right now. My mind is fried and shot.
If I may offer, he just like me for real.
Yeah, it's Denji from Chainsaw Man.
Shoutouts
to Denji from Chainsaw Man. Best boy.
Shoutouts to Chainsaw Man, which I believe is getting an anime adaptation too.
Very soon. Yeah. I'm so excited. Also, Mob Psycho season 3 soon. So excited. Yeah.
We're in a fucking renaissance of anime.
Oh, fuck. Watch Yurei Deko. It's the new Science Saru series. You have to watch it. It's the new Science Saru series.
Will do.
It's like a video game.
My unpower is undeniable. I'm very good at improv because I always yes and.
Nice. That's good. You're undeniable. This is the end of the episode. You can find us on Twitter at NetSurferPro. You can get updates in teasers for episodes. I just rhymed episode with another episode, but that's fine because a lot of songs rhyme words with their own words, and it's not a big deal that people make out. It'd be a big deal because they don't like current music, because they like older music, and they're oftentimes racist or have other hang-ups about current music, and they just hate whatever is popular because they're contrarian and they want to feel like they're better than other people.
Somebody once told me it's been.
You can also follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Follow us on, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Podcast. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know what you think of our episodes. Give us any suggestions for future topics to cover. You know, hopefully as things are kind of settling out, we'll be able to record more regularly in the future and get episodes out a bit more regularly.
Yes.
I'm really excited for some of the stuff we still have on the menu.
Yes.
And you better bet Chimera Land is going to be a nominee for Game of the Year for our Net Surfies.
Yes.
You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. I really should change that Twitter handle sometime, but I have like, you know, hundreds of podcast episodes that I've already used my current one in. So it's like, well, if somebody new listens to the podcast, they're going to have a hell of a time trying to find me.
It's the self-brand problem of...
It's really funny. I keep going to Rivals tournaments and they'll be like, what's your Twitter handle? And I have to say it. And they're like, oh, it's not Twack. And I'm like, well, you see, it started because I was starting up with Board Game Twitter, and in Board Game Twitter, you use your real name a lot of the time, and, you know, all this stuff, and then it's just like, I should just change it. If you follow me on Twitter, at Matt Craig Gaming, you'll be alerted when I do change it in the future.
It could be Twack, you change it to Twack, and then your description has formerly Matt Craig Gaming.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that a lot. See my tweets on there, get links to all my other projects like my albums, my mashup albums on photonpunch.bandcamp.com. Just last month I released a new one called Casual Lobby. Has a lot of fun songs on there.
It's very good.
You can also get a link to my Twitch at twitch.tv/twack, where I stream on weekdays. My stream schedule's been a bit off, but I have been doing a weekly thing where every Monday I stream a game from the Humongous Entertainment catalog of point-and-click adventure games. So you got your Putt-Putt, your Freddy Fish, your Pajama Sam. I'm doing them in release order. As of recording this, I just streamed Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo, which is one of my favorites when I was a kid.
Which, if I remember correctly, the next one is going to be Pajama Sam?
I believe so. The next one is the first Pajama Sam.
Yeah.
Which is also exciting. So that's on twitch.tv/twack. I'm not sure when I'm going to get this episode up, so I don't know if this will be before my charity stream. Probably not the one on the 19th, but on the August 22nd, the Monday after this goes live, I will be streaming on twitch.tv/twack, raising money for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, a charity that's very near and dear to me that I've worked with a lot before. I will be playing Shadow the Hedgehog, and for every $100 I raise for JDRF, I will be adding an extra playthrough through a different route of Shadow the Hedgehog. There's a chance I might also have chat vote on what route I take through the game, what endings I do for any given level. It's going to be a real hoot. Shadow the Hedgehog is one of my favorite kusoge out there. Big fan of it. Big excited.
Good Godspeed, and I hope you don't get the full hero path and have to spend 30 minutes on Maria's level.
Godspeed you, Black Hedgehog.
As for myself, you can find me on Twitter at and on TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWLS0N. I post my hot takes. I'm going to try and stop doing that a little bit, trying to be a bit more positive of a person. If you want more positivity, you can generally check my TikTok. I post a lot of videos of my cat and stuff. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. Still haven't uploaded a video, but one day. More importantly, however, you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, where I have actually kind of begun to stream. Most recently, I did make good on my promise, and I did actually stream my first impressions and ranking of every single Mega Man Robot Masters song. So I think I might stream some like strategy games. So, if that's your jam, then, please stop by and say hi. Bye bye.
Oh, and we might stream Multiverses Duos sometime.
Yes.
I'm really excited to try that out.
Yes. God. Yes. I would love to do Multiverses Duos.
But for now, I have a Bug Woman to play. See ya.
See ya.